What's going on? You're listening to the Film Drunk Frotcast, coming at you not live from a series of frot quarters. I'm Vince Mancini, and I am joined, as always, you know him, you love him, he is the irregular regular, Mr. Matt Lieb.
Well, the whole world loves it when you love my bum, I don't know, man.
I liked it. Yeah, you kept it nice and PG, you know?
Yeah. I had to, like,
PG-13, wait. PG-13, maybe.
Yeah, I waited till the song finished, you know, so that it could feel, you know, like, natural. I don't like to sing over the music happening at the same time, you know?
Sorry, next time I'll stretch.
Yeah, just more. Like, you know, how many more years?
I know. One of these days I'll get it.
How many more years?
You know who else is with us?
Who?
Future NFL Hall of Famer, Mr. Brendan.
Lum lum my asshole.
Turtle power.
Lum lum my asshole. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. International ass eaters.
Okay. I get it now. Yeah. But Matt almost stepped on it. I didn't know what song you were doing. Yeah. But this week, so we have an interview this week.
And that's right.
Wait. Hold on. Ah, lick that butt. Everybody move to the back of my butt.
Yeah.
I like it. He's gonna be loved that we gave him this intro. But we got director Lance Oppenheim. He did Some Kind of Heaven back in 2020. That was the documentary about the villages in
That's
Florida.
Right.
And then he has a new one out on Hulu / I guess it's FX. And then I just happened to watch it on Hulu. Sperm World, which is about the wild world of unregulated sperm donors. Which
That's right.
I didn't know it was a thing until I watched this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have, before this movie, I would have thought to myself, like, like unregulated sperm donating is when you, like, are in a lesbian relationship and you just ask your friend who has a really good jawline, like, hey, do you mind coming in my wife so that we can have a baby? I did not know the depths of, like, this world before this movie. I couldn't have even imagined it before I saw
it. It's funny because there's all these people that, you know, there's reasons why they don't go to a sperm bank, and they're all really good reasons. And then you watch
it's because they don't trust the banks, you know? It's high interest rates.
You know?
They got that big cum bailout in 2008.
I'm 100% into crypto.
Crypto cum, better cum, you know?
Yeah, it comes on the blockchain.
Way better than fiat cum.
So he did a documentary about that. I don't think we need to introduce it too much. There's a few characters in it. Ari is a Jewish guy. His parents live in Palm Beach. I think he had 130 kids, I think, at the time of the movie, and like 160 now. Mm-hmm. And he sort of travels the country, like just... staying at his donor children's houses,
right?
I don't have any idea why the moms let him do that, but we talked to Lance about that.
Then there's an older gentleman named Steve who is a divorced man who is trying to help a woman with cystic fibrosis conceive a child. Who, you know, it is ambiguous as to how bad the cystic fibrosis currently is. I believe she had recent lung transplant. And it's like it's a movie in which, like, when I first heard Sperm World, I was like, oh, that sounds like a theme park I'd go to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or that sounds like, you know, if there was a bouncy house at your mom's house, you know?
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, that's my nickname for your mom's stomach.
Yeah. Yes. but then, you know, watching this movie, it's almost had the opposite effect of the Some Kind of Heaven title, in which, like, you're like, Some Kind of Heaven, like, what is this? And you're like, oh, it's about the villages. Mm-hmm. And this one, it was like Sperm World. And I was like, fun. And then I was like, oh, man, this is something else. this is so much like less funny than the title implies in terms of
but like, also still
it's,
funny.
Oh, it's still very funny. It's still hilarious, like conceptually, but there are just these very serious moments in which you realize that, you know, cum is some very serious business.
Yeah.
As much as we like to make
light of it.
Yeah, we make light of cum all the time, you know?
I always appreciate the lingo and acronyms that go into any sort of subculture. And so
a big
part of the exposition in this movie is done through the Facebook group where
it will show
people asking questions and then you see answers. And just always funny to see the way people kind of like create these sort of rules and different buckets of what constitutes what, you know, this is this and these are the specific rules.
Yes.
Really interesting because especially where I think it could potentially get complicated and he doesn't really dive into this in the movie, but you know, there's some people who are like, yeah, I think some people are just kind of creeps and like trying to,
some people are just trying to come.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you have when we think of sperm donors, we tend to think of like, yeah, you're donating to a bank and then someone's going to inseminate it with a syringe or something like that.
Right. But then turkey based.
There are people who do natural insemination, which we talk about, but how many people are into natural insemination because that's, you know, they,
cause that's just sex.
Just have sex versus like, oh, I'm actually trying to like do something helpful here.
And then how many people are doing something helpful, like trying to help you have a kid, and then you're realizing they have like 130 kids, like Ari does.
It's clearly a kink in a way, and however you want to regard
or like
that.
Some sort of psychological issue. And I think it's like one of the things in this movie doesn't make any judgments about whether or not like it's not trying to diagnose anybody, and it is so you spend the whole movie like in your mind going like, I can't tell if I'm entertained by this guy or I want all of his children to gang up and murder him like they did Grandmeister Pycelle in Game of Thrones. You know, like when you have so many kids running around, all I can think of is like, give one of them a knife and end this guy. We cannot have an entire world of this guy's fucking Michigas being spread through his DNA. And like, that's the other thing I'm thinking about. I was like, how much of this like mindset is nature versus nurture here? And do you really want to risk it?
Right.
You know?
Anyway. All right. So you guys can hear the interview and we'll come back on afterwards and maybe talk about it a little more.
All right. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we are on. We got Lance Oppenheim, director of Sperm World on Hulu and FX. I previously knew him from Some Kind of Heaven, which I think I had on my best of in 2020, another great documentary about the villages in Florida. Lance, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm good. I'm better now that I'm here with you guys because I... Your review of Some Kind of Heaven, my mom, she printed it out and she gave it to my grandpa and he read it and he was extremely proud of me for that. So, thank you. Thank you for making me feel like not a failure to my family. You know?
I'll have to do that, work on something like that for my own parents, but I love anybody still printing out an internet article.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this day and age, it's very sweet.
Vince, if you want, I'll write a review of you
sure.
and post it.
As a human. Yeah,
as a human, yeah. Post it on the internet, and then I'll send it to your mom to print out and put on her refrigerator.
We'll convince her that I made like the top, the 30 under whatever. What were those?
30 under 40.
Yeah. Under 50 now.
Under 50. 30 under 42, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know how old you are.
So the movie, Sperm World, this started as a New York Times article. Is that how, was that how you heard about the story? Was that from the Times article?
Yeah. I kind of heard about it a little before then because Nellie Bulls, who wrote the article, Sperm Kings Have a Problem, Too Much Demand. She came to me, it was like literally the night of the election in 2020. And she was like, hey, I know you're probably busy watching that, but you know, if you want a distraction, here's this idea of an article I have. And it was cool. I mean, because she really invited me into her process. It was really like, you know, she had some notes. She's a lesbian woman and she was trying to get pregnant and find sperm and she didn't like the sperm bank option. So she found these Facebook groups. And then she was like, I don't really know where to go with this, but I have some ideas, but maybe like you'd find this interesting as a movie and maybe we could just kind of start working on like, as I work on the article, you can start working on, you know, maybe what could become a film. And so I started interviewing people and Nellie wasn't as involved, you know, as the movie kind of kept going, but that was a really formative time for me because I feel like I needed someone, you know, who had a similar experience to people in the groups, you know, mm-hmm. She was searching for that. And I think just having the ability to trade observations and I found some people that ended up being in the article and, you know, I just think she's such a hilarious, she's like such a witty writer. So it was nice that process.
Right. So you mentioned her not wanting to go through a sperm bank. And that's sort of where all these characters kind of start is that they're trying to get sperm donors, but not through a sperm bank. Like, what were some of the reasons that they didn't want to go through like a regular sperm bank?
Well, you know, I mean, I think overwhelmingly the system is just so fucked for the average person right now in America, especially. Sperm banks are mostly owned by hedge funds, and the cost of a single vial of sperm is a lot. And if you were to just basically, you know, we'll get straight into it. You know, if you were to ejaculate into a sperm container that would basically, be used for a donation, the way the sperm banks do this is they kind of split it up into one donation. Like, let's say it's 5 milliliters or something of, you know, sperm.
Yeah. They'll for break me. That.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. 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 Nice. I just want people to know, but everyone's different. Go on.
You know, they split it up into several different liters, and each liter is sometimes upwards of like $1,000. And so, you know, it takes a lot. It basically takes multiple vials to get pregnant. And so for a lot of people, it's just not, it's cost prohibitive. And
they're getting charged per vial. Like to do that? Okay.
Her vial. And then, but then there's also, so I think cost is a major factor as to why this whole subculture and, you know, these groups, this sort of unregulated sperm industry exists. But I also think it's not just cost. It's also for some people, it's really choice. Like some people really want to know their sperm donor, you know, and when you go to a sperm bank, this is what Nelly's experience was. Like the only thing you really get to know about the person is, you're given a picture of them in their childhood, you know?
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
You don't really, and maybe you're also given, I think, like a vocal sample of what they sound like. But you don't get to meet them, and you know, there's not really that face-to-face thing. So I think it's each person has different reasons, but I'd say overwhelmingly the reason this whole is popular, you know, this is a popular form of procreation now is because, yeah, it's just it's expensive. It's overwhelmingly expensive, and people who want to get pregnant who are in same-sex relationships or, you know, whatever the reasons are that they're, you know, trying to go to a sperm bank. This is sort of the alternative. You know, sometimes it's the last resort for some people. Sometimes it's not.
I have a question regarding the so the donors themselves. The one thing that I wasn't certain of was whether or not the donors were literally donating, like not getting paid whatsoever, or if there's some sort of payment, or do they work that out between the donor and the recipient?
I think it's, I mean, it varies donor to donor, really. And in the film, there's like one guy does it completely for free. One guy does it for free, but asks for recipients to cover the cost of the travel. And then one guy charges like $80, you know, for a donation. So it varies, but I'd say the reason this is so popular is because most of them, and that thing that kind of drew me to want to make a movie about this was that when I started looking at the Facebook posts, you know, it was a lot of these men were offering their sperm for free. And so it ended up becoming a thing like so many. It seemed like the reason they were there was because maybe they were trying to do something good. Maybe they were trying to help people. Sure. But a big part of it was like you could just feel this very palpable sense of wanting to feel like you matter in the world. And, right. You know, feeling like you worthy of replication, you know, and when these guys are posting about their, that they were like chess champions in middle school, that's like one of the reasons why you should accept their sperm. You know, it's like, there's something very, very interesting about that. And so that plus, I think just the very fact that so many of the women that were posting in these groups too, it was just like, there was so much poignancy, you know, in their quests to try and have a child. And so many of these people had gone through so many hardships and their odyssey to do this. And, you know, whether through the system or outside of the system. And then, you know, when the men who really can't fully relate to it, would comment, they would basically post like a smiley face and be like, I'm available after this, like, you know, really horrifying, horrifyingly sad. Like, this is the reason I'm here right now. So it was fascinating to me, just that tonal, you know, juxtaposition, I guess.
Right. I mean, Facebook groups in general seem like a rich vein of potential documentary fodder. Like, just like
communities of desperation, like run the gamut on Facebook. But I feel like this was a triumph in finding the one that I was the most like, okay, what's going on here? Like, I've never been so enthralled and at the same time just confused and wanting to really know why they are the way that they are. You know,
well, it's interesting. Facebook groups in general, it's like it's you know, for documentary casting, it's like, I don't really use Facebook that often anymore in my like social life. But it's so active for communities, especially like this, where it's, you know, it's not just about, there's a big part of it where it's like, I'm looking for a donor or I'm ovulating, is anyone available? Or a donor is like, hey, I ship or I do this. then there's a whole other facet of it, which we try to sort of show in the movie too, where there's just like a kind of extremely supportive, beautiful thing that happens between women who are really trying to do this and are, you know, are in it together in a way. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of, I don't know, it's like this feeling of a communally shared loneliness, but also mm-hmm. it's, you could tell because each person is sort of segregated out, you know, and they're on their own and they're finding each other on the internet. It's like a communal but isolated sense of loneliness that I feel like I was feeling at least when looking at those posts. You know?
Let's stop down for 1 second. Brendan is here. I'm just going to let him in and just tell him we started. One moment. Vince, you might want to write this down.
Oh, okay.
Time code wise, so you don't have to search for it.
Yes, yes, yes. Got it.
Brendan. Hello. Hey. Okay. So we started the interview and we're just going to
pretend you've been here the whole time.
We're going to pretend you've been here the whole time and we'll
record the beginning at the end.
We'll record the beginning at the end. That's right.
Damn. Movie magic.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Movie magic.
All right. So obviously I have a ton of questions about like basically everyone involved in this, but I mean, you start with, I think the opening vignette is like the hotel room in Santa Cruz. I think Matt is also a UC Santa Cruz graduate.
So
nice little time
over at the Capri. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you know you actually know, you've seen the Capri Motel before?
Oh yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Listen, I had a great time in college.
Okay.
I was donating a lot of sperms. You guys know. I'm sorry. I'm making myself more disgusting than I am.
The first vignette is two people that have met, and they're actually, he's not going to donate like in a cup. Like they're going to, it's like they're strangers and they're going to do like, you know, traditional intercourse. Was there a reason that they decided to do that way? Is there like a way of thinking that it's supposed to be more effective or something, or how'd that work out?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different ways that are the popular ways of donating. There's artificial insemination, which I'd say like most people are doing in the groups. So it's just like a guy masturbates, gives the donation in a cup, and the, you know, the recipient, the woman, will do her thing with the stuff afterwards. And then there's natural insemination, NI, which is sex. And then there's PI, which is partial insemination, which is like very strange and very, I think, not as common. That's when like the guy gets himself sort of to a place where he's about to climax, and then he'll,
enter.
Yes. And then, I think that's when people are doing that. I feel like that's usually, I'd say, where like there's a lot of miscommunication between donor and recipient, and you have a lot of bad actors who are sort of operating in that space. The first donation in the movie, that was like the second day of shooting ever. And that donor was someone I had met through the process of working with Nelly and her article. And we were following him around, and he got a message from Anika, the recipient, who's in the film briefly in that moment. And it was like 6 p.m. in Los Angeles. And he's like, we got to go to Santa Cruz now because she's ovulating. And so we dropped everything and we drove like 6.5 hours, all the traffic to Santa Cruz. We landed there probably like, you know, we stopped for a meal or whatever. So we got there probably close to like 1:30, and we started shooting like at like almost, it felt like 2 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, I don't know. It was such an unbelievable, you know, there's a cosmic thing about that scene, because it's the only scene in the film that actually led to like a positive pregnancy. And,
right.
Oh, really?
You know, her daughter, exists in the world now. And it's beautiful. But also I feel like the reason, you know, the rest of the movie starts off with a successful pregnancy, and the rest of the film, we're seeing people who are, struggling to conceive. But there was also something to me that was important about, I guess, starting the film off with sort of like something that felt just pretty lurid, I guess, like two people meeting in this park motel in the middle of the night. And it seems like she's really trying to kind of get to know this guy, and he's not interested at all.
He's driven 6.5 hours, and he's just kind of like, I'm tired and I'm ready to go.
I'm ready to go, yeah.
If there's one thing I know how to do, it's put P in VG and get the cum out. She's like, what's your favorite band?
You know, drive? Yeah, she's just trying to just, you make know, it have a normal thing. Conversation. Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a impersonal thing that he's doing. And anyway, so it was important for me to capture sort of that feeling, how like transactionally strange this could be, mm-hmm. and then reveal the sort of like the magic that could come from something like this. That
yes.
In a way for her, the, like, she says it was a horrible one night stand, but that experience is almost in some ways like negated to, because she has this beautiful child in her life that gives her life so much meaning now. And so I felt like if you could start the film off with that, and you could successfully show the dream being fulfilled, that when you're with the rest of the people in the film, it's sort of this like, you know, that on the other side of this sort of, like purgatorial space where they're dealing with people that they probably wouldn't normally deal with or put themselves in situations that are a little compromising, that if just around the corner, there's that magical thing that could just change your life forever. So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. that feels like sort of the perfect storm of the people in your movies, which I always am curious about. It's like you have to find someone who's incredibly compelling, but also find someone who's willing to let you just be in the room. Like in that case, like in a seedy hotel room that they're about to have sex in, like they were just totally cool with that. Like what was that process of trying to get there? Like
it was incredibly awkward. I mean, it's like this whole experience, I feel like has my tolerance for like discomfort and awkwardness. I feel like socially, even when I'm not filming, I feel like I have like a Teflon vest now, because I just put my crew and I in literally the world's most uncomfortable situations. But no, in that case, it was really like, it was interesting because Anika, the recipient, is so, she's a therapist in her, real life. And she's a very open person, and she, in some ways, I think felt more comfortable weirdly having us there. You know, it was like, because she knew that if something weird were to happen, that at least there would be people around and we could sort of stop whatever was happening if it ever got to a strange place. But shooting that was bizarre. I mean, I Sophie Kissinger, my producer, she like met Anika right before this, and kind of in like 20 minutes or less had to be like, this is not a pornographic film. We are affiliated with the New York Times. This is a documentary, and like, this is how we're going to try and do this. And what we did for that moment was like, I put the camera in the room. I kept the two of them apart from one another until we were fully set up. And then when we were set up, I disappeared into like the bathroom where I was watching on a monitor. I was literally like slouched in the bathtub with Sophie and Christian, my other producer. And, my cinematographer was also in the bathroom. Like all of us were just, the only person who wasn't in the bathroom was Richard Carlos, my sound guy, who was recording sound. And I just remember, like, I couldn't believe that was the first and only interaction between these people was this guy telling her how she has to do a handstand so like the sperm stays inside her, and then she needs to orgasm. Can she do that? And and she's just like, what? What are you talking about? So as soon as they finished talking about like what the process of how it was going to work, then we moved the camera out, and then, we went back inside, and that's not in the film, but we filmed the sort of post-coital discussion, which in some ways was, it felt like still awkward, but less intense than the lead up, I think.
Yeah, that was going to be another thing I wanted to ask you about. I mean, like, you talked about how many awkward situations were in this movie, and I would imagine...
Uh-oh.
Oh, what?
Vince.
What?
Wasn't Vince. Me this time.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Vince.
There you go.
I cut out on you?
What? Yeah, keep going.
I'm on the wired connection, but anyway. I would imagine there are moments where... like as a person, you want to like fill the awkwardness or like, you know, make it less awkward? Or like, is there times when there's the person in you is sort of at war with the documentarian who knows like what kind of how good the material you're getting is?
I mean, it's usually just like there's, you know, it's always what you're hunting for. You're looking for moments. You know, I think like the way that we make these films, David, my cinematographer, and I, and Dan, who edits them, and my producing team, it's like, you know, we're always trying to kind of create an experience for the audience where it's like they're what they're watching is real, but it's taken a lot of conversations. Like every image, basically, there's a conversation you're not seeing that leads to the image being shown, right? Mm-hmm. And so I want to create this sort of subjective like feeling when you're just to swim through it. And for me, I don't know, I find it like much more engaging than just watching like a, you know, your average sort of verite documentary. And it's also to me a lot more like, even though like a talking head documentary, that's what I feel like what's aesthetically more common these days. So, like, there's to me, every time I watch like a talking head interview, I'm like, there's nothing probably more constructed than this. It almost feels like a someone being interrogated. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's very uncomfortable.
Well, they're so literally saying the exposition out loud, usually.
Yes, like yeah. right. And it's just for me too, personally. I feel like there's limits for like what I've been able to capture through interviews like that, or just through like just observing something without telling the people in the film like what I'm interested in capturing. Like in that moment in the motel room, I was like, I told both of them separately. I went out and talked to Anika, and I talked to the donor in the room too. I said, you know, I'm gonna film everything up until the moment you guys are going to have sex, and so I don't know what you're gonna do, but here's the camera. It's a wide shot. I'm not going to be moving in for coverage or anything. This is what it is. And that's it. We'll see how it goes. And so a lot of the time, I don't know, to me, it's just sort of like that dance, I guess, is really what it's all about for me. And when there's a moment of just true absurdity, I guess, or just like, it kind of like does this weird thing, and some viewers maybe won't like it, but to me, I love it. Like it's this uncanniness of seeing something in such a cinematic presentation that is so bizarre. It's like, mm-hmm. it's realer than anything you could ever have composed or constructed, but it's happening in this very composed frame. And so that's what we're always doing. And it's like, if we can do it right and we can get there, then we like in the moment, I always will look at David, my cinematographer. He'll look at me and he smiles this big smile, and I smile a big smile. And then after we finish the shooting, I'll go and I hug the subjects, because it's like we were able to get there together.
We did.
I don't know. Yeah. In a weird way, it feels like all the experiences of making these movies, and you know, the people in the film, they all love the movie. And I think the reason they probably love it is because it felt like, when I invited them into the process of this, it kind of felt like joining an artistic troupe or something. Like, I'm going to be making a movie that is real, and it's going to be about your lived experiences, but I'm going to do it in a way that's probably different than how other people would approach it. And I'm going to tell you at all times my position on how I feel about something in your life, and how I'm going to compose and show it and express it. And if you don't like it, then we need to talk about that. If it doesn't feel real to you, you may not like it, but it needs to feel real to you. And if it doesn't feel real to you, then you need to tell me that so I can get it there, right?
Right.
Anyway.
So you
I
got
think
a few
really so go ahead. I think it's really interesting that you showed the film to the subjects and they liked it. I think that it to me is like it's an insight into, I mean, the film is great, but also I'm wondering if like you were getting any insight into their own like mind, like their mishigas, because I feel like, you know, the movie is takes pains to be sensitive, to not try to psychoanalyze any of these people, but I as the audience member can't help but be like, what is driving this behavior? And so you, when you say, you know, they liked it, I'm wondering, like, do they also like it because it's a movie about them? Because all I can think of is like the form of narcissism that it takes to be like, I got to make 130 of me's. There's got to be more me in the world. Like, that's all I can think.
Sure. Well, I think it's, I think it differs for each person, right? Like, I think Ari is sort of a self-professed narcissist. And so I think for him, you know,
he's a guy from Palm Beach that has, like, I think 130 kids at the time.
Yeah,
And a mother that's very disappointed in him.
Yes. Yeah. I think, you know, it differs for each person. Like, Steve and Rachel are both people who are very private. Same with Natasha, you know, Tyree's fiance. And I think Tyree was looking, but I think really the big thing is that each of them had, like, I think all of them really want, or the thing that probably unites everybody is that they felt lonely in some sort of way, that they had an experience that they haven't been able to share with other people.
Sure.
And I think the experience of making a film in this sort of way, I think the thing that's always, like, strange about it now is now, you know, people, you know, are talking about it, and they're, you know, I feel like what we tried to do in constructing this, especially editorially, was to really present a lot of this without any of our opinions. I mean, there's music, and there's, you know, there's a lot of expressive choices we're making, but all of it is really in service of, like, getting you inside this, the headspace of the people in the film. Like, when you're with Ari, he views his life as this, like, you know, screwball comedy. And so that's sort of the way I'm trying to present it. That's, like, that's the way he sees it. Yeah. And that is uncomfortable for a lot of people.
For everyone around
him. It's interesting. I had an experience a long time ago where I made, like, an observational documentary, and I didn't tell the people in it what I was thinking or how I was going to put the pieces together. And I sort of figured it out editorially afterwards. And I imagine, you know, I know that that's probably how 99% of most documentaries are made, is it's like you get close to people, you observe them, and then you make something, and they're not happy with the observations you've made. Right. And I think that the things I'm trying to do now is I'm not just trying to make, like, an observational movie. I'm trying to sort of, I'm observing somebody, but I'm also trying to observe the consciousness they have, their feelings, their emotions about something. And I want, like, my portrayal of them to basically be, to not just be observed life, but really contain the way they feel about their lives or the way they feel about a specific thing. And so that's
like, you're inviting them to perform. And in so doing, like, you get to something real about them, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, certainly there's a lot of moments that don't work. And I think in the other project I have, Ren Faire, I think that's like that process is, it's really taken to a whole another plane of, like, a whole another level, just because the world there and the people who exist at that in that universe are all natural performers.
Right.
I think there's a question of performance too in this. That's why I thought the style of this kind of, we would need to figure it out. It's like when a donor and a recipient are meeting each other for the first time, they're both trying to figure out how, like, the donor is sort of like Tyree, for example. He has this sort of professionalism about him. You know, he has a questionnaire he's prescribing. For Steve, it's more like he's trying to get to know the person and really form a sort of deep relationship with them. Yeah. And for Ari, it's like there are no boundaries, and the performance of what he's doing with them is no different than when he's with his students in his math class or when he's with his parents.
I feel like with Ari, I was yelling at the screen, wondering, like, why the women he's donated to are, like, so comfortable, like, letting him be into their life, like, to have them, like watching him, I'm like, well, this is why sperm banks exist, so you don't have, like, this guy sleeping in your bunk bed.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's really charming. It's really the answer. He's so fun to be around, and I think it's an interesting, you know, I think, like, a lot of the women that he's had children with don't have really a relationship with him, but there are, you know, because he has so many children, there are a lot of women that do. And I think he never makes it sort of if you want him to be involved in your life, he will be involved, and he will love your child because he loves all of his children. And he will be as and he will probably overpromise and extremely underdeliver all the time. But it's not because he has bad intentions. It's just right. because he's in this sort of situation.
A logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you guys can relate to it. I relate to him so much. It's like when you make plans with you're not sure if someone's going to show up to a dinner with you. So you invite like four other people to the dinner and then suddenly one of that person, the original person shows up and they're pissed off at you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That forever for him.
It's like booking a podcast.
Yes,
you've got a few different people on backup and then you're just like, oh shit, the original person said yes. I have to say no to one of these people. Yeah.
It's your children. Yeah. yeah. You're a father to them.
Or they want your cum. I thought like the greatest moment in this for me that kind of like really drove home the the world that Ari is in was the person at his birthday party who was like, I'm going to need you to give me some cum right now. and he's like, I just did it. Can we?
I just did it. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we wait? And she was just like, I actually think it'd be good if I tried now and then also tomorrow. And he's like, all right, let me go to the bathroom real quick.
Yeah. No, it's an amazing moment. I mean, it's also, you know, she says, she's like, you know, she had miscarried previously so she's like, you know, we would have had a child if. Yeah, but if I hadn't miscarried, the child probably would have been at this birthday party. Yeah. And I honestly think that's really the thing that is motivating him at this point. I don't think he's trying to be like a Genghis Khan type. Like I think there was maybe a part of him at a certain point in his life where he was just like, wow, I'm really good at this. And like people want this. And I feel so good that every time I go, you know, masturbate, I don't feel shitty about myself. I feel like awesome because people are celebrating me and thanking me so much. And everyone in my family doesn't understand this, but these people love me, you know? So I think that was what was going on. But now I think it's more of just like, I believe that he's trying to stop. But it's impossible for him because I think he's the most prolific person that's been doing this. And there will always be someone that will show up to him. Yeah, he's the king.
He's the king.
That's Ari.
He's the king.
He's the best.
The king is Sting. Yeah, I just think there's always going to be that person that shows up that's just sort of like, look, man, like, you know, it didn't happen for me. Can you make it happen? And so I think he just has an impossibility of he's not good at setting boundaries for himself.
Yeah.
And I wish you guys could meet him
really
because he's just a special guy.
Yeah, you really see that with the way his mom talks to him.
Yeah.
And then I think that does a really good job of kind of illustrating that point where he is kind of a people pleaser and he's just going to, you know, he eventually gets cowed into, you know, rubbing one out at the bowling alley or wherever the hell they are. Just truly amazing. Truly, I was blown away. I want a reality show with Ari.
I
want
know.
You
yeah,
around
yeah.
Full time.
Hey, well, there's plenty more. You could Google him. That was sort of the one thing I was nervous about in working with him was, you know, he's been in the media so much. So I was like, what kind of portrait can I paint of him that hasn't been painted already?
Yeah.
But I think part of it was his relationship with his mother. That was for me. I love my mom and I'm very close with her, but you know, she's a Jewish mother. She expresses her love for me in similar ways, stress and judgment. And so I related deeply to him. You know, in some ways I also just, I saw Bo Is Afraid and I just was starting to work with Ari around that time. And I just was thinking so much about, I was like, he's actually, his journey in our film is not too, it's like, I think fundamentally that's actually what he just wants validation from his mom. He just wants to be told that he's a good son and that he's not a fuck up.
Yeah, you know. It's weird though, because it's like I can tell that it affects him. The fact that his mom is like, you ruined your life. And at the same time, you know, he's gonna miss like Passover to go to Hungary so that he can give someone some sperm. And so like part of me is like you know, I mean, it's a complicated relationship with the mother, I'm sure. You know, not being there for possibly her last Pesach is probably, you know, got its downsides and upsides. But yeah,
well, yeah, and just, she just passed away about like 2 weeks ago, or maybe a little bit more now, 3 weeks ago.
So that and really so he, was when, her last Passover.
It was, yeah. Oh. And when he went and saw it again. He's seen it a few times, you know. Now it's out, but he saw it on the big screen with an audience, which was special. And yeah, you know, I mean, it's a bittersweet thing. I mean, it's basically, I think he's very happy to see her memory, her life preserved in this way. And for her, she just hated, you know, for so long. I think a lot of people were trying to get her to talk about, you know, what he was doing as if it was like, what does his mother think about this? Is like a New York Post story.
Yeah.
But you know, I remember the way that we were sort of like, look, if you are in this, like, what we're interested in is not you to. I just want to see how you actually feel about this. It's okay that you don't support it. I feel like that's probably natural. How most Jewish moms would go about it. You know, but that's what the movie is to me. I mean, that's like, you know, and it's like maybe I should have called the film something else other than Sperm World. I just was so tired, you know, Some Kind of Heaven. I love the movie so much and I love the title, but I was tired of people not remembering what it was called. So I was just like, I should just come up with something fucking catchy for this.
Yeah.
But you know, the movie is really not, it's like, it's the sperm is sort of a, it's a talisman or whatever. It's like it's a thing MacGuffin. That's, yeah, it's the thing that it's the binding symbol that ties everything together. But it really, it's like, I mean, literally the object is its existence when you look at it, and all these people trying to barter over it and figure out a way to get it, you know, and it's and then, you know, why they want it is such a it like reveals such deep fundamental things about their personalities and their dreams, and it's a very extremely emotional film in a lot of ways.
Well, Sperm World is a great title, you know?
It's just funny, even like the fact that like sperm and cum and all this stuff it's just like I don't know, I mean, maybe it just goes back to the way we all were like educated or something, but mm-hmm. it's like, it's just funny to me that it's such a silly, it is silly, but it's also like, why is it silly? It's like, that's where we all come from. We come from, you know, we're the lucky ones. Yeah. Millions. Yeah, exactly. There could have been a million other versions of us. And one 10, you know, 8 milliliter ejaculate, you know?
Yeah. We won the race.
We won the race. You mentioned Some Kind of Heaven. I felt like the one character who reminded me the most of Some Kind of Heaven was like Steve, the divorcee who's sort of fit and likes to shave his head and you know, swims a lot. And I know you grew up in Florida. Like, is that like having a special power as a documentarian? Like, it seems like it's almost like a performance enhancer. Like,
well, I mean, he Steve's an amazing guy, and he out of all the people in the film, he was the most, I think, interested in the filmmaking process, similar to how Barbara was in Some Kind of Heaven, the widow in the film. And you know, both, like, Barbara is a huge cinephile, Steve massive cinephile. For the holidays, for Christmas, like 2 years ago, I bought him the Transcendental Cinema book by the Paul Schrader book. And he outclassed me. He started because I've seen a few of those movies, but I haven't seen all of it. I like read half of it when I was in college. He fucking finished the thing cover to cover. Every time I'd be with him, he would be like, "So how are you gonna frame this? Like, is it gonna be like that shot in that Ozu movie that's in the book?" And I'm like, "Well, which Ozu movie?" And he'd bring it up and cite it. You know, it was just this whole thing. I mean, I you know, look, I think the fact of the matter is like. I think age does have something to do with how we relate to, I mean, how people relate to cameras. I think like anyone probably below the age of 60 is very familiar with a form of like reality television, you know, or just a way of presenting yourself on social media. That I think anytime the camera is around you, there's a performance that you think, even if you don't know the person, you're sort of your own relationship with the camera is dictated by like the way other media has sort of popularized it. And so I think Steve, you know, he's very media literate, but I think he's also just so, I think he's just gone through so much shit in his life that he can't help but be extremely honest about how he feels. And I think he lives in a very isolated part of, you know, Tennessee, where he's just looking for a connection in that way. But I look at Renfair and the King in that, you know, project, George, and he's just like an absolute, like, one of a kind character. Like, there's no one in the world that's like, I can't wait for you guys to see it. There's no one in the world that could ever be like him. And the way he deals with the camera and you know, you'll see it. It feels like dangerous in a way, because when you're with him, he truly is like the most unpredictable person I've ever filmed with. And I think that's because, the age thing. He's old enough that he doesn't give a fuck anymore. But also, his point of references are so different than like anyone in our society today, you know, are. I mean, the closest thing I can think of is like he talks exactly like David Lynch. You know, and I don't think he's really even a David Lynch fan. So I don't know where those guys came from. Maybe it's like Jimmy Stewart or something that they were watching those movies growing up.
Was that why the Safdie brothers came on to produce? Because it was just like a certain amount of unpredictability. Like, all right, well, this guy's unpredictable. That's kind of our thing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really Ronald Bronstein, who directed Frownlands and, you know, writes and edits all of the Safdie's movies. He has continued to be the biggest champion of that project and was the most involved with us in the making of it. And he's just an absolute genius. And I think he was always interested and kind of embarrassed by his interest in Renaissance festivals. and I was like, there's nothing to be embarrassed about, man. They're fascinating. Granted, they're like the most, it's capitalistic society you can think of, even though it's sort of used to be, it was created by people that really came out of like the Deadhead movement. Now it's sort of like you play, you know, one of those games, the whack-a-mole game, or you know, or the game where you have the gigantic hammer and you're supposed to, you know, hammer in the anvil game. You don't win anything for playing that there. You pay $50 to play that game and you just fucking hit the thing and that's it, you know? So it's it's amazing.
Ever since someone was telling me that there are like fake prostitutes at Ren Fairs that will like have sex with people for like fake money sacks, like in, because it's like part of the Ren Fair. I was like, okay, I need to know so much more about.
I actually didn't know more about this Ren Fair. People who play the role of the wench, you know, like the wenches are sort of a trope at the Renaissance festivals. But you know, it's a fascinating. I can't wait for you guys to see that. I think, but it's a different project.
About,
you know?
People just have sex at Ren Fairs. That's
what that too.
Definitely think over time there is like a sexual component to it that probably didn't exist when it first started, right?
Of course.
I think when it first started, it was really like offshoot of the hippie movement and stoners and real artists that were there. And now it's more like, I'm going to go get fucked up for a weekend and just get absolutely obliterated, dress up in a kind of scantily clad costume and, you know, with my friends and let's see what happens. You know, that's sort of the
eat a turkey leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhat related. I just went to Medieval Times for the first time. Oh, hell yeah. Amazing. And I definitely was like, oh, all these people are just smashing each other all the time. It's like theater kids, right?
Yeah. I mean, you would hope that they were, you know, not just fucking, but like, I don't know, like doing it,
getting the horses in on it and stuff.
Yeah, well, while jousting, I'm saying, you know, like, you know, but
period appropriate.
Yes. I wanted to ask just kind of follow-ups on some of your subjects in the film. The woman, I'm blanking on her name, with the cystic fibrosis.
Oh, yeah, Rachel.
Rachel, right?
Yeah, Rachel. Has she seen the film, and is she?
Yeah.
How's she doing?
She's doing much better. Which is great. Yeah. She watched the film with Steve. She saw the film before, you know, alone, and then she was like, "I want to watch it again." And We watched it in, with Steve in the very home theater where they're watching, you know, the other movie. So it's sort of a, and I have a group chat going with them, right? You know, it's like, that's sort of, I mean, they're texting me right now. They're very, they listen to like every interview and read every review, and they're very happy. She loves the film because I think, you know, I don't know. I think their relationship is really beautiful to me, where it starts off as something that kind of like probably what you'd think of the movie. You see the term sperm world and you're like, okay, this is going to be some kind of like romp, or, you know, it's going to be silly. And I think you first see Steve and you're sort of like, okay, this is a guy who's, you know, really longing for something, a connection. And, you know, it's a, it's confusing. He's giving his sperm to somebody and it's like, she, you know, is, he can't tell if she's interested, or, you know, he also is, he's much older than her and he hasn't really been out on single in a long time. And so it's, it, he's sort of testing the waters. And then once it doesn't work, like, I feel like the fact that they still have this relationship and the fact that, you know, she, it almost like it goes deeper than just romance, or, you know, like there's an intimacy that's fostered that isn't romantic, but in some ways is more profound.
I mean, I got sense that Steve really wanted to, like help, like genuinely help someone, when it came to, Rachel. Whereas like, it, like, even though he had feelings, which I think I almost felt like, you know, the situation, I think, naturally creates that. I mean, how do you not, you know, fall in love with somebody who's like, you're giving your sperm to, and
who
meets you first and then decides, I still want to go through with this. I mean, you know, that's natural, but,
and he's of a different generation and time. And so I think, you know, all of this stuff is, it's like, he's like a fish out of water trying to, he's like experiencing life again for the first time, in a new way.
Yeah, but I was, you know, I was worried by the end of the movie. I was just with Rachel's prognosis because of the cystic fibrosis. What is it? Cystic fibrosis. And
yeah,
so,
she was doing that. She was. I mean, look, it's tough when you have cystic fibrosis and you've already been given a lung transplant and the lung starts to not work, you know, again. It's impossible really to get another lung, and that's what she's, that's her, that's what she's working on right now. And you know, I'd say she probably has the same sort of life expectancy as Steve to some degree, which is like maybe, you know, I don't know, 10 years, 12 years. It's a death sentence really. So it's but when we were filming, it was really like things took a turn for really the worse. It was unclear if she was going to be alive for more than a few months. And so that was really terrifying for her, obviously, and for all of us who had gotten so close with her through the process of this, you know.
Is she still trying to conceive?
She's not anymore. I mean, I think right now she's just trying to get her. Well, I think there's a lot of things, you know. I think that that's the other thing that's really bittersweet about the movie, I think. And for her, it's like the dream, she'll never give up on it. But I think because there's sort of, she feels like she gave it her all. And also I think maybe the film through it by extension, it's like the energy she was trying to give towards this, the fact that there was someone there to sort of document it. I think it's allowed her to sort of be like, okay, if I know that if I do this, I will accelerate, you know, the chances of my death. So I'm going to just focus on trying to be alive and be, and find other ways of fulfillment and happiness, without that. So yeah, you know, it's heavy shit.
It's very heavy.
I think like watching it with her was very emotional because I think we all, you know, we had that experience, collectively, you know, that it sort of like memorializes the desire and the dream, but also where we all are now, it's likely that that dream will never happen for her, you know.
I
think this is a compliment, just to be clear. I feel like I wanted so much more from that movie, just in terms of like, you could have done, like I said, a reality show with Ari, because like I don't need to say anymore. Like everyone, it's so obvious right away. Like everyone wants to know more about Ari. But then also, like, yeah, I really thought that Steve was just so, what an interesting character he was. He was so interesting. Yeah. And just kind of watching him, the relationship grow with Rachel, even if it's not what he wanted. I just thought that was amazing. So,
Well, hey, thank you so much.
It definitely,
you know, I probably could have kept making the movie for a long time, but it you know, I sometimes, it's bittersweet. Like now that it's over, I do feel, you know, and I still remain really close with like all the people in the villages that were made that film. And, you know, I talk with them at least once a month and, you know, here I figure it will be the same. And I've been in contact with everybody a lot as the movies come out, but it's bittersweet to basically, you get so close to the people you're making these films with and then they end and you still remain in contact. And I've gone and like visited Reggie and Anne and Barbara and the villages several times, but it's sad to, it's like, that's the end of that chapter. So selfishly I would have kept making the movie just to keep spending time with everybody. And I was really hoping that someone would, you know, conceive and we'd be able to be there and I would be, you know, almost like a godfather or uncle or something to their children. But you know, maybe that will happen with Tyree Natasha. Cause it seems like things are moving in, you know, the right direction for them to adopt.
You'll just have to become a donor yourself.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, I've thought about, I haven't, but I was thinking like, you know, maybe it would help, garner, you know, some press or something, but to bring it back to the film, if I, you know,
it's a viral version campaign. Of guerrilla marketing, you know?
Yeah. No. It's interesting. I'm too, like, I've said this to all the donors in the film, cause they always are like, why don't you do it? I'm too, I hate myself too much to do that. I can't. I mean, you know, I make movies as a distraction from my my problems in my life, and so I it's easier to focus on, you know, absolute control over every single facet of a project, and then also giving up parts where you know you can't control things, and so I want to have children, but you guys have kids?
Yeah. I have a 2-year-old and a 10-year-old stepson, and I was watching with my wife and I said something like, what do you think? I was just joking with her. I was like, what do you think if I became a donor? And she got like like earnestly angry, and I was like, I was making a joke. And she was like no. You're not doing
that. Yeah, do not fucking do that.
I know.
Yeah.
But it gave me a little bit of insight of like how accepting some of the some of the wives in the movie have to be.
Yes. Yeah. And also, you know, I think it's I think men have a different relationship with their baby making serum than women's baby making serum. You know what I mean?
Like, because we don't have to do anything. We're just like, give it away.
Right.
Well, it's interesting. I think that's sort of the thing that I have one friend who's very close to me, and he is a father, a new father, and that was his big criticism of the movie was he was I think he was just sort of like, you don't know how fucking hard it is, man, to be a father. Like, you do a lot of shit. And I'm like, oh, I'm not saying you don't. I'm just, but I feel like the thing that is sort of the through line throughout the film is that it's, you know, like the men are the storks, at least in the, you know, they show up, they give the cum and they leave, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, you know, you can't ever compare yourself to what it takes to be a woman to actually have a child and go through that. And
I mean, certainly not in front of them. You can't.
Yeah.
And the responsibility that it actually takes to do it. I mean, it's just different. Yeah. It's interesting to see like three different guys' relationships to how they feel responsible to what it means to be a parent, especially for someone like Tyree, who's like, you know, I think he's excited to adopt his donor conceived child, but he's not, I think he's doing it at least initially, when we're in the film, you know, more for his partner, Natasha, than he is for, you know, like, I think if it wasn't for her, he probably would just be like, you know,
right.
I have another 60 of them. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, it is really, I think, one of the most, it's the most effective, affected I've been by a documentary in a long time. I don't think I've ever felt in some scenes so uncomfortable in my life. Like, and all I could imagine was what you had to go through in order to get the stuff that you got. Because there was moments where I was just like, I had to look away from, it was like, I had to look away from the screen at moments because I was like, oh God, just the interpersonal relationships and the kind of like casualness of this very strange situation for some of these men it's something, a sight to behold.
Well, hey, thank you. You know, yeah. I mean, the awkwardness and like there's magic and tension to that. So that was,
yeah.
The thing that was the most difficult about making the film over such a long period of time was just like the amount of travel and, you know, like the amount of days we spent just, you know, at first it was really fun. And especially because I'm making these films with, they're all like my, you know, my crew, it's because I've made two things back to back. And also just generally like, the amount of time it takes to make these, like we spend more time with each other than we do with our own families really. Right. And so, that was fun. But then by the end, it just like, there's only so many times you can eat Taco Bell, you know, 5 days in a row. It starts changing your brain chemistry. Like that's the, we put our bodies through a lot of taxing.
You were truly living Moss.
Yeah. Yes. You were living way too Moss.
I was.
I mean, Ari is living the most Moss.
Yeah. Well, Lance, I said we were going to keep you for like 25 minutes. And I think we more than doubled that. And,
so, yeah. Thank you, man, for sticking around.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys doing this. And I'm a big fan of, you know, of what you guys write. And Vince, you've been such a supporter of my stuff. So thank you. It's a pleasure. It's all mine. You know, it's great to see it. It had that, effect. For you all, and I'm excited for you to see Renfair. Hopefully we can do another one or something.
It looks amazing, so I'm excited.
Very stoked for Renfair. Very stoked.
All right, well, that was a fun interview.
Yes, it
You guys enjoy it when we did it?
I had a great time. 10 minutes, it was a fun interview. He's you know, I like him. I like Lance.
Yeah.
Lance is he's a cool guy. He's a young guy. I gotta say, I think I had
the movie about his dad.
What's that?
I like the movie about his dad.
I like the movie about
his
dad.
Yeah, the father of the atom bomb. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, you know, I liked it better than Barbie. I wanted to tell him that.
Yeah, he also wanted to do a movie. He wanted to do another movie about guys who have sex all the time after, you know, because that's what his dad was doing, just having sex all the time.
According to that movie, and you know what? I'm pro that. Father of the atom bomb and father of the atom cum. I'm sorry.
Are we missing the eclipse right now? Is that what's going on? Or did we already miss it?
I mean, so the eclipse is still happening.
It looks pretty bright out there.
Yeah, it's very bright. So the eclipse is still happening. I don't have glasses in which to look at the eclipse. So I tried looking at it earlier, and I realized that's just looking at the sun, at the worst time to look at the sun. And now one of my eyes is doing something weird. But I think it'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's like the one thing they always tell you not to do, Matt.
I know, but why do they tell you not to do it?
That's what they told us about sex, too.
Exactly. And look how that turned out. What they told me about heroin. Guess what? Best decision I ever made.
So, Brendan, I want to know more about medieval times.
Yes, please.
How awesome was it?
So awesome.
Sick.
That's about all I have to say.
Yeah.
No, you know, it was very Renfair. I will say the cable guy did not lie. They do serve Pepsi, I can confirm.
Nice.
And they also, you don't have utensils. So yeah, it was just it was very good. It's very theater, but the kids loved it. It was my son's birthday, so we got him knighted. Got a big kick out of that. Cause like the whole crowd, it's not the whole crowd because it's like before the show starts, but it's like a room full of people by the bar. And then there's just this roped off area with like the queen and her I don't know what this guy is, advisor or something.
Roped off area. That's what we call Matt's mom.
You fucking bitch.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So there's all these people waiting in line to get their like 32 ounce strawberry daiquiris or whatever. And so they're just like going ape shit. They're like, you know, by order of the queen, we name you a knight, you know, and everyone's like, yeah, you know, so pretty cool for a 6-year-old to have a whole room full of people cheering for him. It was pretty fun.
Oh, nice. Did you, did they have good chicken tendies? I assume there was chicken tendies.
No chicken tendies. It was, what?
They didn't have chicken tendies in medieval times, idiot.
Therefore, there are no chicken tendies at medieval times.
Wrong.
So yeah, it was like tomato bisque and
you know what they didn't have in medieval times? Fucking tomatoes.
Oh, for real?
They didn't.
Yeah, tomatoes come from the New World, bro.
It was supposed to be in Spain. That's which was new to me. It was like about a whole Spanish.
Yeah, they didn't have a I think the tomatoes came from the New World, so there wasn't no tomatoes pre-Columbus. Anyway, go on.
That's crazy. Wait, so you're telling me Christopher Columbus wasn't out going up to the Indians going, try my pasta fajou.
No.
That sucks. What's even
you're
the
point
of being Italian?
You're making the sauce wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to cut the garlic real thin so it liquefies in a little bit of oil.
Yeah. Add a little sugar. What's the point of being Italian if you're not going to give... All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, no, the food, you know, is decent. You get like a quarter of a roasted chicken, which you have to eat with your hands again, which is fun.
Like it.
Yeah, it was just, it was good times, you know, dude. It was very Ren Faire. They do like, you know, they announce like all the different knights. And it's a little complicated because they tell you really quickly, like when you come in, they assign you a knight and you sit in your knight section.
Okay.
And so we were the black and white knight, and which is fine. But they also said like, well, we're allies with this knight and you kind of like this knight, but you hate these guys. And they just tell you real quick. So I kind of forgot like we were supposed to be cheering for besides our main guy, but they do like,
you know, that's true to the medieval experience. Like there was rivalries were shifting and you didn't always remember which lord you served, you know?
Exactly. It was just like Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And then they do like the jousting. Mm-hmm. They do things like, you know, there's like a little hoop that they have to put their lance through, you know, when their horse is running, there's like a target. So it was pretty cool. And they used all, and then, you know, someone gets unhorsed from the jousting, and then, you know, they're fighting with weapons, but they have a squire who's like, you know, they'll get their sword knocked out of their hand and it's very like theater, but the squire will like run out a battle axe after that. And then they're like fighting. So I don't know. It was pretty entertaining.
I still haven't been there. I need to go sometime.
It's totally worth going. I liked it. I drank beer out of a horn. That was like a big, you know, that was a lot of fun.
I'm surprised there aren't like 10 like slightly different variations on medieval times, like from different time periods and settings and stuff.
Yeah,
like
I wish
Mongol
there was
times.
Like a Spanish Inquisition themed, you know, like restaurant,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, you're getting your shoulders dislocated while you answer questions from a Torquemada.
Just people trying to guy. See and how all Jewish
the,
you are.
Yeah. All the dinner items are very like pork heavy just to prove that you're a real Catholic and not a converso.
Not a converso. Are you a crypto cave Jew? I don't know why I can't just do a Spanish accent with that, but it was more funny. Well, that sounds like a wonderful time. I feel like I would love to take my kids there. I'd love for my kids to be, by kids, I mean my one kid. I would love my child to be at the age where she could go literally anywhere.
Right.
And it, enjoy it. And it not just be a new place in which she drinks milk. You know what I mean?
I mean, if
when
you
does
can
that
take...
happen? What age is it like, hey, want to go to Chuck E. Cheese? And they're like, yes, sir. I would like some Chuck E. Cheese, please.
No, you. Well, I'm still not to that age yet. I'll tell you that. It's a
I
lot
don't
of
even remember what that age is. It's all a blur. I mean, like three.
I know this. It's every parent I talk to. They're like, I don't fucking know, dog. Like
right now, I'm at the age where it's like, hey, do you want this type of food? And they'll be like, yeah. And then you give it to them and they're like, no, I don't want this. And like they're, you know, they change their minds on a dime, let's say.
Yeah. At the age where they start acting like a woman. Am I right, guys? Fellas, 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 fellas. We're men. balls, come. Well, I think that's been a Frogcast. I don't know about you guys.
Sure, sure.
It really was a great conversation. I like Lance a lot, and please.
Brendan likes Lance a lot, too. That was his favorite night at the Super Bowl. Hey, you guys.
Weirdly guys wholesome fun to end this episode.
I also wonder, the big question I have is, the one we went to is in Buena Park, California, which is like north Orange County. It's like right on the border between Orange County and LA County. So I would have to imagine there was a lot of aspiring actors and actresses there. But there's ones in, like, I was looking at the map that was printed on the inside of my crown. It was like Toronto,
right.
Scottsdale, Nashville, I think Orlando.
Scottsdale. Ooh.
And so I'm
there's
wondering,
a few of
like,
them where you're like, "What? How did you get this job? And like, did you... Are you from Nashville, or were you like, did you move to Nashville? Because you're like, someday I hope to make it in the music industry. And while I'm waiting, I'm going to get a job in Medieval Times."
Yeah, just kind of talent pool wise. You got to wonder, because, I mean, they were legit pretty. They seem to be pretty good horse people, horsemen.
Yeah.
They're all men. So thank God.
I'm just kidding.
So yeah, I just like, it's got to be hard to find good people who can also like act and like do the thing, because like, you know, you get good people who are like playing to the crowd, you know, they're like they're like talking shit, not talking shit, but like, you know, clowning on guys when they knock them down and stuff like that. So
I mean, but see, like in LA, at LA Medieval Times, like the guys that are really good at it, they probably get called up to be like in movies and TV and stuff. But if you're in like Scottsdale, like maybe you're just the best actor
in Scottsdale
that
in local
has never
theater.
Yeah, like you're like the, you don't get poached away from that.
I wonder if there's got to be a famous person out there who's like, they started their career at Medieval Times,
right?
We just don't know it yet. You know what? I'm going to Google it. Famous actors who...
Yeah, like the Paul Rudd. You know how Paul Rudd was like a bar mitzvah DJ? Like the version of Paul Rudd who was, you know, a squire at Medieval Times. Do they have a town crier?
What's a town crier do again?
They had like heralds. They had like heralds, but they didn't have like a town crier.
Yeah, same deal, right?
Yeah, I definitely, the thing that occurred to me as I was watching it that I still haven't done is like, I'm going to go on the Reddit for, I bet there's a Medieval Times Reddit, and I bet that there's all sorts of great information on there.
Right. There was, so I remember a few, I can't remember how many years ago I read this, but like Dolly World, the Dolly Parton theme park, had like a version of Medieval Times that was like Civil War themed or something. And they had to like really tone down all the Confederate stuff.
Sure.
Because so I wonder if there's stuff like that where you know, certain parts of Medieval Times were deemed problematic and they had to water them down somehow.
I cannot find a single actor.
You went to Disneyland too, right?
I did,
Brendan?
Not.
Oh, you didn't? No. Okay.
Thank God.
I remember when we were kids, the Pirates of the Caribbean had like very like overtly sex slave portions to it. Like, weren't there like wenches in a cage or something in the
Caribbean? There was all sorts of people in a cage. There was a man chasing after a lady who was clearly going to sexual assault her, but they switched it up and now the lady's chasing the man with a rolling pin, so it's more normal now, you know, just regular misogyny instead
more
of violent misogyny
now.
I think we gotta end this episode. It was a great interview. We had a great time. I gotta take the point is, it's just a big doo-doo coming, you know? Great. Please, run. Don't walk to the nearest Hulu and watch Sperm World, a movie about Vince's mom. And check it out. Give it, you know, give it a good review on whatever.
And go to Medieval Times, which is also what we call Matt's mom's pussy.
Okay, patreon.com/frogcast, frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Brendan, why don't you take us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening as always. Maybe this week is the week that I will figure out how to broadcast on Twitch. From my phone, so I can play the crosswords. Frotcast@gmail.com or frotcastbrendan@gmail.com if you want to hit me up directly. Thanks as always for listening. And until next week, good night and good chins.
Hell yeah, dog. Oh.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.